This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Protesters take to the streets of the U.S. city of Vancouver for the second night to demand justice for yet another black man killed by the police. Thousands of people march in the Yemeni city of Taiz to denounce the French president's anti-Islam comments. At least four people are killed as super typhoon barrels into southern Philippines, bringing intense rains to the region. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Bahram Sajafi. Good to have you with us. Starting with the U.S., data shows a record 90 million Americans have voted early in the presidential election. Concerns about exposure to COVID-19 at busy election day voting places on Tuesday have pushed up the numbers of people voting by mail or at early in-person polling sites. The high early voters are about 65% of the total turnout in the 2016 presidential election. Well, voters are saying that the coronavirus is their top concern. This while President Donald Trump and his Democratic rival Joe Biden are campaigning across the nation to try to sway the few remaining undecided voters. Opinion polls show Trump trailing Biden nationally, but with a closer contest in the most competitive states that will decide the election. Trump has been harshly criticized for his economic policies and poor handling of the pandemic. The candlelight vigil in the U.S. city of Vancouver for a black man shot dead by police has turned ugly, with rival protesters getting into a brawl. Arrests flared up as the mourners were paying tribute to Kevin Peterson Jr. The 21-year-old was killed in a city near Portland, Oregon, on Thursday night. Supporters of President Trump, some of them carrying firearms, clashed with the mourning crowd. Windows were shattered and U.S. flags were burned. Some people in cars used pepper spray against each other. Federal agents in riot gear arrested at least seven people. The U.S. has been the scene of protests against racism and police brutality for several months. The rallies began after African-American George Floyd was killed by a white officer in Minneapolis. The political party associated with U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders has a blacklist on Iranian media. The allegedly leftist Democratic Socialists of America repeatedly says that they will push U.S. presidential candidate Joe Biden's foreign policy in a less belligerent direction, but how can they do that when they refuse to even speak with Iranian media? Rami Mazari has more from Chicago.
We have given priority to non-mainstream political groups during our coverage of the U.S. presidential election. We have spoken with socialists, greens, libertarians, and more, but the Democratic Socialists of America, perhaps best exemplified by failed presidential candidate Bernie Sanders, has openly blacklisted Iranian media. After repeated requests, the Chicago chapter of DSA wrote that, quote, "The officers of our organization have decided that it would not serve our interests to do an interview." This caused management to contact DSA's headquarters in New York City to confirm if this allegedly leftist political group was really enforcing a blacklist on the entire media of an internationally recognized nation. As expected, no response was given, so crucially, no denial either. It's a disheartening policy for a group which openly promises that, if elected in greater numbers, their members will push the Democratic Party, and thus the entire nation, to an unprecedentedly progressive left. Take, for example, their most prominent member, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She said as recently as September, quote, "I think overall we can likely push Vice President Biden in a more progressive direction across policy issues. I think foreign policy is an enormous area where we can improve. Immigration is another one." That begs obvious questions. How can DSA officials from the national down to the local level make U.S. foreign policy more progressive if they refuse to talk to foreigners and their representatives? Should DSA members get elected or be appointed to public office, their members are willfully ignorant of foreign viewpoints. Just as worrying regarding the quality of the public service they will provide, DSA cadres are being trained to use a unilateral approach when dealing with non-Americans. Lastly, how authentic and patriotic is DSA if they are not reflecting the values which the average American seems to champion, such as the freedom of the press? While the U.S. is days away from voting in their election, Iran's next presidential election is in June. It appears critical for Iranian voters to consider that if DSA, the allegedly leftist wing of the Democratic Party, refuses to engage in normal cooperation with friendly Iranian media, then what is the likelihood that such people are going to truly push Washington's Iran policy in a more open and progressive direction? So even if Democrats win next week, DSA's blacklist raises the question, how could a Joe Biden presidency drastically alleviate the U.S.-led sanction war on Iran?
The Democratic Socialists of America should immediately reform their wrongly guided decision to blacklist Iranian media. The refusal to do so would be an extremely belligerent stance, which only lays the groundwork for more ignorance, murderous sanctions, war, and anti-internationalism, and from a group which claims to be democratic and socialist. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
A nighttime curfew has once again been imposed in the U.S. city of Philadelphia amid protests over the police killing of an African-American man. A short while ago, we've discussed that issue in detail with our guests in our news review program.
The U.S. city of Philadelphia has been put under nighttime curfew again amid ongoing protests over the fatal police shooting of an African-American man. Now, this is the second time that the curfew has been imposed in Philadelphia this week. National Guard troops have already been deployed there, with the mayor saying forces will also be sent to critical government buildings and other infrastructure. The demonstrations began Monday after 27-year-old Walter Wallace was killed by two officers who claimed he was approaching them with a knife. Victim's family, though, says that he was suffering from mental issues. Since then, more than 200 people have been arrested and a number of officers injured. Some businesses say that they've been looted and vandalized throughout the rallies. And now joining us for this news review is Colin Campbell, joining us from Washington, D.C., and Walter Smolarlik, editor at Liberation News, joining us out of Philadelphia. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program. What's going on, Colin? Give us the latest, if you could.
Yeah, so the National Guard has been deployed in Philadelphia. They say that they're there to protect buildings ahead of the elections, which will be on November 3rd. And if you've seen just how some of these protests have played out, we have seen a number of times when there are provocateurs or saboteurs or vandals that accompany some of these protests, either just trying to discredit the movement themselves or just trying to create mayhem to create more disturbance than what is necessary. And so as a measure, a defense measure, or some would say a proactive measure, these National Guard troops have been deployed around the city, setting up staging areas in case that the protesting escalates to a level of either looting or rioting or some type of vandalism where property is definitely threatened and people's lives are threatened.
Thank you, Colin. And Walter Smolarlik, welcome to the program, bud. Hope you're doing well. Now, Walter, we have two things going on here. We have the ongoing protests we've seen for months against police brutality, against people of color, and excessive use of force by U.S. police against people of color. And then we have the politicization of the rallies themselves, what Colin just alluded to, especially now that we're getting really close to Election Day. Your thoughts on all the stuff going on at the same time here?
That's right. I mean, it's truly a remarkable confluence of events. I mean, here you have the wanton murder of Walter Wallace Jr. by Philadelphia police officers, and the Philadelphia Police Department has a long history and notorious record of brutality against black residents of Philadelphia. Listeners might be familiar with, for instance, the Move bombing in the 1980s. But yeah, I mean, this is something that is systemic and entrenched in Philadelphia and expressed itself in a horrific way when Walter Wallace Jr. was gunned down in front of his mother, who was pleading with police officers not to shoot. And yes, that's right. I mean, this comes a few days before Election Day. And Pennsylvania, I mean, could very well be the state that decides the election. Donald Trump has made, quote unquote, law and order a central feature of his reelection campaign. He's promising to crack down, to be tough, so to speak, against people who are exercising their right to protest against racism. He's completely embraced the police. And so this is something that he's predictably trying to politically capitalize on ahead of Tuesday's election.
And Colin, what does Donald Trump tell his supporters that the radical liberals and the radical left, they support the looters and agitators and vandals out in the streets, and they want to defund your police and basically care nothing about your safety, right?
That's right, and this is a political strategy on behalf of the president and his administration to demonize those who are trying to assert some type of feeling of self-determination or feeling those who feel they are marginalized by law enforcement or justice systems that are in place that are supposed to be designed to protect people. Also, the mischaracterization of defunding the police, quote-unquote, is also rampant when trying to use it as a political talking point. As many people know who are familiar with the phrase actually means, it doesn't mean to get rid of the police. It means to reallocate funds that are given to police to possibly better organizations, agencies, or departments so that they can respond to calls commensurate with the level of attention that is needed for a safe outcome for those involved. So if you look at the situation with Walter Wallace, the 911 was the call for 911 was placed because he was having an episode. They really were hoping that an ambulance would show up, a medical professional would show up, someone who could de-escalate the situation and attend to Mr. Wallace in a way that would lead to a safe outcome. Instead, the police were called, and as they say, if you're a carpenter, every problem that you face looks like a nail, and then you respond by hitting it with a hammer. Well, this is what the police did, and yes, Walter Wallace was reported to have a knife, but it's very unclear. Well, I wouldn't say it's very unclear, but it is very much disputed whether or not police had to fatally shoot him. There are a number of episodes and scenarios where we've seen people with a dangerous weapon in their hand, not a firearm, mind you, where things were de-escalated and the person was either given attention medically or the situation was then diluted. But in this case, of course, they just decided to shoot because that's what they're trained to do.
Thank you, Colin. And Walter, your final thoughts on this, please.
Well, I think that, you know, the protests are going to continue in Philadelphia and all across the country. I mean, we can't forget that this is connected with one of the most important political dynamics in the country, and that's the ongoing uprising against racism and police brutality that I think has become a defining feature of politics and political discussion and in fact the broader society of the United States. I mean, we really can't overemphasize, I think, the importance of the fact that while these problems are not new, the problems of police brutality are not new, the response of people to it has so much energy behind it. And I think that's something that will be very, very long lasting.
And it's something that's been lost in the message in Donald Trump's camp and with his supporters, unfortunately. But thank you for bringing that back into the forefront. Thank you, gentlemen. We're out of time. Both of you, I'd like to thank you for joining us on the program, and do stay safe. Colin Campbell from Washington, D.C., and Walter Smolarek joining us there from Philly. That's a wrap for this segment of your news review. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Moving on with the rest of this news broadcast from Tehran. Two people have been killed and five wounded in a stabbing attack in the Canadian city of Quebec. According to local police, a sword-wielding suspect dressed in medieval clothing was arrested in a few hours on Sunday. Police said the suspect was a man in his mid-20s and was transported to hospital for evaluation. Police asked city residents to stay inside with doors locked while an investigation was underway. The attacks occurred in the historic Old Quebec neighborhood. Police made no comment about a possible motive behind the attack. Thousands of Yemenis have held a protest rally against the French president's anti-Islam stance. The demonstration was held in the southern city of Taiz. Protesters condemned Macron's Islamophobic remarks and policies. They urged all Muslim nations to unite and boycott French products. Macron outraged the Muslim world by defending the publication of insulting cartoons of Prophet Muhammad under pretext of freedom of expression, and that after a teacher was beheaded by one of his students for showing the blasphemous caricatures. Authorities in the Philippines are warning of a possibly catastrophic condition as Super Typhoon Goni hits the region, forcing thousands to flee to safety. The state weather forecaster says that Goni is the strongest typhoon of the year, with a maximum wind speed of 225 kilometers per hour. Several regions are going to experience destructive winds and torrential rainfall over the next 24 hours. The storm has killed four people, ripping off roofs, uprooting trees, and flooding villages and farmland. Officials say that some 316,000 people have fled their houses to safety. The airport in the capital, Manila, has been closed, and Coast Guard has ordered fishing boats and ferries to return to the port. On average, 20 typhoons and storms hit the Philippines every year, causing damage to harvest, infrastructure, and homes. Now, many European countries have started implementing tougher restrictions as coronavirus infections continue to surge across the continent. Russia has reported a record high of over 18,000 new infections and some 250 deaths in a single day. Russia has a total of 1.5 million COVID-19 cases, the fourth highest in the world after the U.S., India, and Brazil. Meanwhile, the U.K., Portugal, France, and Austria all announced lockdown measures and restrictions to stem the virus spike. Europe accounts for half of the world's COVID infections, with an average of 240,000 cases per day. In the meantime, a wave of protest rallies against the government's anti-COVID-19 restrictions continues in Italy. Two more demonstrations were held in Rome amid tensions between police and protesters.
More protests were held in the Italian capital on Saturday over the government's decision to impose tougher measures to contain the spread of the pandemic. Early in the afternoon, hundreds of far-right demonstrators staged a rally in Campo di Fiori against a new decree which has ordered the closure of gyms, cinemas and theatres, requiring cafes and restaurants to close their doors at 6 p.m. Clashes with police were recorded during the demonstration. Later on Saturday, another protest was held in Independence Square, not far from Rome's central train station, where thousands of protesters vented their anger at the latest anti-COVID-19 restrictions. This demonstration, dubbed You Close Us, You Pay, was called by a coalition of social movements and base unions.
From north to south, Italy's been hit by a wave of protests, some violent, following the introduction of more stringent coronavirus shutdown measures by the government. The country's interior ministry has warned that these demonstrations have been infiltrated by subversives who are trying to stir up trouble.
As the contagion curve continues to rise in Italy, Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte insists he doesn't want to enforce another lockdown, but many fear a new national quarantine is becoming inevitable.
So many people have already closed like their activity after the first lockdown. Some managed to survive, but they won't survive a second lockdown.
The government is expected to present a decree including new restrictions as early as Monday. Targeted lockdowns and restrictions of movement between regions are among the new measures reportedly being discussed. Max Civili, Rome.
That's right for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality. Culture, Eastern Tales, Roundtable Discussions, Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shimanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of Parstoday. My dad is in the art of
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, November 1st, 2020. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails and letters. So contact us and tell us what you think about our programs. Or if you have any messages for our listeners around the world, then record your voice and send it to us and get your voice heard. Remember, dear listeners, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Welcome back. As usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very useful and important to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports, as you may know, enable us in IRIB English Radio to provide a better service to our listeners throughout the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving a QSL card from us normally, but these days, with the outbreak of coronavirus pandemic, unfortunately, please don't expect a QSL card from IRIB English Radio. As you may know, sending any material on behalf of our radio is temporarily halted due to the outbreak of coronavirus. And here, I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including MS Serena Vasaraju from India, Andrei Martiniuk from Russia, and Mohammad Riel from Malaysia. I really appreciate your time and consideration in sending us reception reports, MS, Serena Vasaraju, Andrei Martiniuk, and Mohammad Riel. And a million thanks to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us letters and emails, which I mentioned some of their names here, including the one Rafiqul Islam from Bangladesh. From India, we have an email from Ram Babu Kumar. Also, Nectarios Manousos from Greece has sent us an email. From India again, we have an email from Jayanta Chakrabarty, one of our regular listeners. And also, Nicolas Perrin from France has sent us an email. Dear listeners, stay with us until the end of the program. We will be back with all these kind messages just in seconds. This is Listeners Special, and I'm here with many emails and letters from our dear listeners from around the world. First of all, here we have an email from Nicolas Perrin from France. Nicolas says, "Hi, and thank you for the kind mail. I like to listen to the radio broadcasts and stations from foreign countries. By listening to foreign radios, I can get information on the life and culture of the people living in other countries while I'm sitting in my home here in France. And I guess it is so interesting." Sincerely, Nicolas from France. I sincerely appreciate your email and thank you for your consideration for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. And as you mentioned in your email, radio is a means for getting information about the life and culture of the people living in other countries while you're at home. Yes, radio is very educating. In this regard, we in IRB English Radio have prepared many different programs, including the programs related to the culture of our country, Islamic Republic of Iran, and it's especially good to listen to them when, during the coronavirus pandemic, it's really special to sit at home and listen to these programs while you cannot travel to other foreign countries. As you mentioned, you've listened to the programs about culture and life of different countries, including Iran. So you can listen to programs like Close Up Iran, Iranian Market, or other programs in IRB English Radio and enjoy them. Nicholas, anyway, don't miss other programs in IRB English Radio and our website, parstoday.com/en. There you can find the archives of our program and enjoy them. Anyway, write to us soon and keep in touch with IRB English Radio. Also, from India, we have an email from Ram Babu Kumar. Ram says, "Dear friend at IRB English Radio, greetings from India. I want to say that please add our club name in your mailing list and send us all types of materials issued by your radio service to our postal address. The useful information about your programs, program schedule, and frequencies is also welcomed. Thank you in advance." Rob Babu Kumar from India, greetings from Iran, and thank you for writing to IRIB English Radio. "Surely, I will inform my colleagues about adding your club name in our radio's mailing list. And regarding your request about sending program schedule or other souvenirs of IRIB English Radio, as we have mentioned several times during our previous programs, sending any material on behalf of IRIB English Radio is temporarily halted due to the outbreak of coronavirus. So Ram Babu Kumar from India, please be patient until the disease is controlled around the world, and then we will be back on track and send you the materials, including program schedule, frequencies, and QSL cards or other IRB English Radio souvenirs. But during these times, you can find our program's schedule and frequencies in our website with the address parstoday.com/en, and you can enjoy our programs there. Ram Babu Kumar, please, in the future emails, tell us which programs in IRB English Radio you like the best, which programs you enjoy more. Tell us your views about our programs and send our greetings to your club. Thank you again, Ram Babu Kumar from India. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with more emails and letters from our dear listeners around the world. Well, dear listeners, Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, one of our regular listeners, has sent us an email. Jayanta says, "It was quite refreshing to get your beautiful email. It's always a pleasure to receive messages from my favorite IRIB English radio station. Hope this letter finds you all in the best of health and spirits. My prayers go out to Allah to keep your team and, in fact, all the friendly Iranian people from harms. We in India are in the midst of the scourge of the deadly coronavirus pandemic. Through effective testing and quarantine, the number of affected people is being attended to. Number of positive cases are now beginning to decline. There is countrywide lockdown in selective regions. People are strictly maintaining social distancing in economic and social activities, and there has been compulsory wearing of face masks to control the spread of the disease. Hopefully, things are under control, though the country's economy and GDP have been seriously affected. government is trying its best efforts in recovering all sectors of the economy. I am delighted to hear that IRIB has started to dispatch QSL cards and the situation returns to normal. I would request you to send me some Iranian postage stamps for collection if it is possible. With warm regards, Jayanta Chakrabarty. Greetings to you from Iran, and thank you for writing this email to us. Thank you for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. So you described the situation regarding coronavirus in your country, which is in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. You said about testings, lockdowns, hospitalizations. I think this is exactly the same in almost all the countries around the world. And there is no choice except observing the hygienic protocols, including maintaining social distancing, wearing face coverings, the protocols that are compulsory in all countries around the world. Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, as you said, as the situation goes back to normal, then IRIB English Radio will send you paper QSL cards and, as you have requested, postage stamps for your collection and also postcards. Thank you again. We wish you all the best, Jayanta Chakrabarty from India. Stay safe and healthy and write to us soon. Also from Bangladesh, we have an email from Diwan Rafiqul Islam. Diwan Rafiqul Islam says, dear staff, hope you're keeping fine. I'm sending you this email from the beautiful city of Nawgaon, northern Bangladesh. I'm fine and the weather here is very hot. Thank you again for your very useful and informative programs, which I really enjoy, especially the news and political commentaries. Keep up the good job. Greetings to you from Iran and lots of thanks for this email. Diwan Rafiqul Islam from Bangladesh, I hope you're doing fine. You said it's still hot in your beautiful residence, the city of Nawgaon, from northern Bangladesh. Yeah, it's not very hot in Iran, but it's not cool yet, though we are in the season fall. Anyway, it's good to know that you found IRIB English Radio programs informative. Thank you. Thank you for writing to us. And thank you for letting us know your views about our programs. Stay safe and healthy. Diwan Rafiqul Islam from Bangladesh. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon in the future. Dear listeners of Listeners Special, we will be back with other emails and letters from around the world. Welcome back. From Greece, we have an email from Nectarios Manousos. Nectarios Manousos from Greece says, dear friends at IRB English Radio, I would like to report the reception of your medium wave broadcast here in Greece. If my reception report of your program was correct, I hope that you will send me your QSL verification card of your eQSL, which we'll do too. In case that you will need more program details for the verification, please let me know so I can get back to you in the future. You can also find few technical details of my reception, which I hope it will be useful to your technical staff. It was really fun listening to your broadcasts. I learned things for sure. That's the magic of the radio. And I definitely would like to hear from you again in the future. Till then, best 73s. Nectarios Manousos from Greece, we are so grateful for your email. And thank you for letting us know that you're so committed to IRIB English Radio. And we're so glad that you find our radio enjoyable. And as you said, radio is an educating means, and that is the magic of the radio. Regarding your request about paper QSL cards, it's halted temporarily since the coronavirus spread throughout the world, so we follow the hygienic protocols and wait until the disease is controlled around the world. Thank you, Nektarios Manousos from Greece. We're looking forward to hearing you very soon in the future. As the time tells me, we have to skip to the section of this week's interview, which is conducted with one of our regular listeners. Hope you'll enjoy it.
Yes, my name's Mr. Christopher Lewis. I've been a listener to the IRIB English radio for nearly 16, 17 years, probably a little bit longer now. I'm just interested in shortwave broadcasts in general, Iran in particular, and events in and around the Middle East. I've just had a general interest in shortwave for a long, long time, and very interested in cultures as well.
My opinion about the radio is that it's got one of the best international news channels that I've come across on any international media organisation. I tune in every day to IRIB English. Of course, the news focuses not just on domestic affairs in Iran, but also Iran's view on world events, not only surrounding countries, but also countries further afield. I tune in mainly to get the perspective of the Persian Gulf region, of which IRIB proposes to broadcast more news about it. They're telling the truth. It's very clear and concise. The news is well researched. It's very well presented. So I just recommend listeners who want an accurate view of life in Iran and Middle East, tune to IRIB English News and other language services for a true and very accurate picture.
Dear listeners, here we come to the end of this week's edition of Listeners Special. Many thanks for being with us and goodbye.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
the debate.
Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. More unrest in the United States as yet another black man has been killed by police in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. 14 shots were fired by police at 27-year-old Walter Wallace, who had a knife. Now, those protesting are angry at police for not handling the situation in a different way and say if he had been a white man, he would have never been fatally wounded. Well, stay with us as we take a look at what has been sweeping the United States, especially this year, on this debate. We're going to start off in Washington, D.C., joined by Colin Cabell. Well, fill us in on this latest situation, this time out of Philadelphia, and also curfews are in effect.
That's right. This involves the case of Walter Wallace, a young man who has a history of mental health issues, and his parents say that when they called the police, or 911 rather, for an emergency responder, they were hoping that a health official would show up. They were calling because he had an episode, a mental health episode, which was not unfamiliar to him, but when it did happen from time to time, it could become violent. And they were hoping that the hospital, a representative from the hospital, first responder, someone who could de-escalate the situation would show up. Well, the police showed up. And that often happens when you call 911 in the U.S. Well, instead of really trying to control the situation where they could have a peaceful outcome, they told him to lower a knife that he had been holding. After they told him several times to lose the knife, they opened fire on him, killing him. And that was the end of Walter Wallace there, who died in a hail of police gunfire. He was shot in the chest and in the shoulder, and he was brought to the hospital where he later died. Now, people are saying that that did not have to happen, and that's why you hear protesters talking about defunding the police. It doesn't mean they want to get rid of police. What defund the police means is taking funds, money, that is usually just given to police departments, but also giving it to other departments, so that on specific calls, these other departments can answer those calls so they don't end up in fatal shootings like what happened with Mr. Wallace.
All right. Thank you so much, Colin, for that. We're going to cross over now to St. Petersburg, Florida, where we're joined by African People's Socialist Party member Omali Yeshetela. Thank you so much for being with us. Omali, you heard our correspondent in Washington talking about the overall situation. And I mean, we have heard this so many times, time and time again. And many people are asking, why 14 shots? Why would, first of all, police have to open fire 7 rounds each police officer for somebody who was carrying a knife but seemed, from the video I saw, not lunging at them?
Yes, thank you very much. And I think we have been hearing this over and over and over again. And it seems to me we've been hearing it enough to recognize that this cannot be an accident. This is not just some careless policing or the absence of body cameras or some kind of insensitivity on the part of the police department. The police department in this country suffers from this problem. And it is because what the police here are dealing with is our community, African people, in the same way that an occupying army, a military force in a foreign territory would treat people. It's you hear these kinds of accidents, like killing this brother, shooting him so many times. You hear this kind of thing happening with the U.S. in Afghanistan, with the U.S. in other foreign territories where they are occupying. They know they're a hostile occupying a military force, and that's what they represent in the African community, with Africans in particular, but also with indigenous people in this country, because you have to remember that the United States is a settler colony. It's a settler colony where Europeans came here just like they went to Israel, just like they went to Australia and other places like that and took the land. and enslaved the people. In this instance, of course, they brought Africans to this country where they enslaved us. And we've been living under a settler colonial domination. It's a colonizer country. And what we saw happen with this brother Wallace is a consequence of any time you have settler colonialism, the proclivity to kill, kill, kill.
Well, let me welcome my next guest to the program out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, Jack Rice, lawyer and media activist. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, Jack, what I was saying to Omali, I mean, we've repeated this so many times and hearing about this. And in this year, 2020, we've witnessed many people protesting and highlighting police violence, especially against African Americans. Yet we continue to witness more African Americans being killed by police still on a regular base. So what's key here? What is missing? What has to be done? Because, as I said, we've seen many demonstrations, and the police are under a lot more scrutiny, but still we're seeing the same result.
Well, I've been listening to your previous guests, and I think first what I would say is we may be witnessing more attacks on African Americans, but the reason we're witnessing it is because people have cell phones. If you look back historically, you can take a look at what's going on in the United States, where African Americans, indigenous people, Native Americans, and others have been targeted again and again and again. The numbers are astounding right now, only because you can't deny them. What we have seen in the past is the United States and frequently police departments have simply denied these issues, and then they go away. But what we know now is that while there are numbers and they continue to be as astounding as they are, we're still seeing a very small number of police officers who are actually being prosecuted. Even further, the number of police officers who are actually being convicted is even less. And I'm coming to you as a former prosecutor, a criminal defense lawyer. I walk into courtrooms almost every single day. And so I watch how these issues play themselves out. A lot of my clients are people of color. And as a result of that, I see those issues, and I've seen it in courtrooms. I've seen it from juries. I've seen it from judges. I've seen it from prosecutors. And I've absolutely seen it from police officers.
Go ahead, Amali.
I think that's a really important statement that he just made, that it has been happening all along, and it's not that people didn't know about it. I'm old enough to remember the U.S. engagement in Vietnam and how one of the problems the United States had was that media were there on the ground, and they were recording the crimes that the United States was committing against the people of Vietnam. And the truth is that the colonizer wants to maintain the status quo, wants to maintain the colonized, but doesn't want to see it, doesn't want to see the consequences of what he's voting for, of what he's supporting, et cetera. And that's what's happening here in this country, in the United States. As the gentleman mentioned, this has been happening a long time, but now you got cell phones, and you can look at it, and you can see a cop with his knee on the neck killing an African man after holding him, pressing him for more than 8 minutes. And normally, traditionally, what happens when we say that the police have done this, the police have done that, and our community's response from the white community is, well, you must have done something. They wouldn't just do that to you. You must have done something. And that's been the tradition up until recently, and now it's something that cannot be easily dismissed, and I don't think it'll ever go away, despite all of the kinds of things that different social media organizations are trying to do to keep people from seeing what's going on, or to frame what people are seeing as some kind of intervention from some foreign country.
Well, Omali, you said that you feel that it's not going to go away because it's being seen. But being seen, is it enough? Will there be changes that will be implemented? I mean, if we look at, we're in almost the end of 2020, and we have been seeing this, especially highlighted this year. Do you think that major changes have taken place? I mean, if we go back to 50 years ago, we've been seeing African Americans and demonstrating against racism and against police violence. So being out there more, do you think that in itself is enough to bring about a change?
No, I don't. I think that if they were able to change, they'd do it. I heard leading into this story how, despite the fact that there have been so many killings, so many protests, and things like that, things still remain the same. Why? I mean, and the fact of the matter is that the protests are so serious now, they're having to talk about sending in national or federal troops and federal forces to try to keep it down. If they could not do it, they would not do it, if it were possible. The reason it's not possible is because African people live under colonial domination, and it's only this nonsense about racism, white people don't like us, or what they call systematic racism. If you get rid of that and treat what's happening to African people like how we treat it happening to anybody else in the world, it's colonialism. And people will not suffer the kinds of things that's happened to them by foreign and alien power without the use of extreme violence. And there's no way they can control this community, control African people, control Mexicans, control the indigenous people whose land is stolen without extreme violence. And the police is that arm of the state that's most closely associated with the people on the ground, in the street. It's the first line of an oppressive system in defense of the oppressive system itself.
Well, Jack, your take on that, because we've seen this growing schism in the United States, and we talk about, especially on the one hand, when we talk about demonstrations, we've seen many white Americans, young white Americans, actually even taking the lead in some of the demonstrations. On the other hand, we see this polarization of other sections of the society. Based on what Omar Lee just said, how likely is it that this society is heading towards more violence? As he said, more and more African Americans are seeing that so many years of protests and really nothing has changed, that at the end of the day, do you think that they will feel that only violence can meet violence?
I think that it'll wax and wane, to be honest. I think that this is a slow and ongoing process. I certainly understand the frustration. I certainly do. And again, I'm in South Minneapolis. I live 9 blocks from where George Floyd was murdered in the street. So I think about what that means. And yet at the same time, I think that there are people who are starting to understand and starting to address issues. Is it enough? Absolutely not. Is it systemic in terms of how things are applied? It absolutely is. And the idea that somehow some will assume and are arguing that it's a question of history, how African Americans were treated under slavery, misses the point fundamentally, because it happens today. It happens right now. I'm not just talking about redlining and the history of redlining. I'm talking about the impact that is happening to people of color in the United States today. And this has happened this afternoon, this morning, and the reaction from those who wish to deny it. And it's that gulf, the gulf between those who don't even see it on the one side, purposely, willingly, and those who have to live with it every single day. It's the need to bridge that gulf, which takes so much time and so much effort. But I'm an optimist. I have to believe that slowly but surely, we can do more. We can be a better people. Martin Luther King was right. We can do more.
I want to just appreciate what this comrade has said. I think it's really important what he said, and he draws out the point that I want to make, that it is systemic. And this system is colonialism, and I think it's important to say it's systemic because, as you raised earlier, that you see white people who are out in demonstrations and holding up their fists and what have you, and it does show the ability on some minimal level of Africans and white people to get along together on to some extent. That I am not disagreeing with, although I might be able to say that the material interest and involved here doesn't mean that it's exactly what it looks like. But I do want to say that people do have that kind of ability under certain circumstances. The problem is that it's not a question of whether people like each other. It's an institutional relationship. It's called colonialism. And in colonialism, there's an oppressor nation and oppressed nation of people. And that relationship is something that is consolidated and codified. And the state itself functions as the protector of that relationship between the colonized and the colonizer. That's what the police is. The police are an arm of the state. It's an occupying military force that imposes itself on African people who are colonized in order to maintain that relationship. So I agree with him 100% that people do have a greater ability, it seems right now, to get along together. But people have to understand that what we're suffering from is not, quote unquote, just people not liking each other. It's a question of power and whether or not African people ourselves should have control over our lives so that we don't have to hope and pray that some juncture enough young white people or old white people or what have you will think highly enough. of us, on their own humanity, that they'll stop killing us. We have to have the power, and to do that, we have to destroy this relationship of colonialism. And that's the domination of one people by a foreign and alien power, and that's what we have here, just as we have had in Afghanistan and other places around the world.
Well, staying with what you just said, Omar Lee, and basically that you're dealing with a colonialist power, so given that paradigm, and if we look at other colonialist entities, they usually did not allow individuals to vote into a change or to pressure them into a change. They usually had to be under so much pressure that basically they were brought down. So what does that mean when you're looking at the United States and African Americans' relationship with the United States? What needs to be done in order to bring about that reality that you were talking about?
Well, first of all, I want to say that on November 7th and 8th, the Black is Back Coalition for Social Justice, Peace, and Reparation that I chair is holding in Washington, D.C., a rally Saturday, November the 7th, under the theme, Down with Colonialism, Black Power Matters, and Black Community Control of the Police. All of these are anti-colonial demands that presupposes the democratic right of African people to have control of our own lives, independent of the United States government that historically has done what it does and to us, et cetera. So we have to be able to fight for our own power. And we've had those kinds of movements in the past that were violently crushed by the United States government. There are scores of political prisoners in this country right now. And some been in prison for 50 years just for trying to win freedom of black people. So what has to happen is that we have to become independent of both the Democrat and Republican Party or any sector of the ruling class and forge our own way. That's the thing that we are involved in doing. That's what I do on a regular basis. So it's going to be up to African people ourselves to take power over our own lives. It's not going to be given to us. It's not going to be something that all of a sudden there's going to be some kind of epiphany and they say, wow, we've done that black people badly. African people ourselves are going to have to do that, and that's what we're busily engaged in doing. People should come to that Black is Back mobilization on Saturday, the November 7th. Again, under the slogan, down that black power matters, down with colonialism. Down with colonialism and black community control of the police. And that's going to be in Washington, D.C. Okay. And we're going to have that rally and march on the White House. And then right across the street from the White House, we're going to have another rally and a conference on the following day.
Okay. All right. Well, Jack, your take, you just heard Omar Lee basically saying it's not going to make a difference. We're dealing with Democrats or we're dealing with Republicans. And we're just a few days out from the election. And there's been a lot of debate and controversy, and especially dealing with the black vote. Does it make a difference if a Democrat is in the White House or if a Republican is in the White House as far as that reality for black Americans, especially when we're talking about police violence?
I think it can in this sense, and it's complicated. If you think about the makeup of the Supreme Court right now, we have now seen a 6-3 split, essentially conservative. And you have to understand, over the last 25 or 30 years, you've seen the Supreme Court continue to swing right anyway. So to call six of them conservatives and only three liberals, if you look at the numbers, it frankly doesn't reflect that. It's probably even further to the right than that. And yet, a poor analogy, but an analogy nevertheless, is what we saw with gay marriage. One of the issues that happened with gay marriage was it only was accepted by the Supreme Court and acceptable by the Supreme Court once a vast majority of people within the country itself said, we must have this. And so to say that they don't reflect society, I think it ignores the reality that political pressure can have on the system itself.
Okay.
I think frequently it's the shift, it's the change in society that drives the political powers to move. It's not the other way around.
Alana, your take about this, there are some that are talking about possible violence even after the election. We have seen more and more militia groups and even black militia groups taking to the streets, heavily armed. What do you think? How likely is that to happen, that this polarization continues and actually clashes, actually violent clashes taking place?
Well, the first thing I want to say is that there are black people, Africans, who are gay too. And so to say there's gay rights and somehow is some kind of astounding development. But what about the Africans who are prosecuted, persecuted? What